What is the purpose? What is the point of hope in this world that seems to be so much more in the shadow of doubt? What is the point? What is the purpose to hope? Hope gives us something to pray for. All right, so then what is the reason for praying when it seems like our prayers are so infrequently answered? Well, we pray because we are people of faith, and prayer is a response for that which we believe in. Even in a world that may be more hopeless, a world that may be more in the shadow of doubt, a world where it seems like our prayers are not being answered, where it seems there is more unbelief than belief, we still hope. We still pray and we still believe. But what is the point? What is the purpose? Isaiah says that the house of God will be on the highest mountain, and that people of all nations will flock to that mountain, and there they will learn to be in peace with each other. Often we like to look at this reading as that message of the hope of the coming of God's house, of the hope of coming together, people of all nations, to learn how to be together in peace. And there's one little piece, one minute detail that we tend to leave out. This house of God is going to be established on the highest mountain. So how do we get up that highest mountain? How do we find hope in this mountain? Well, I think the mountain can be both figurative and both literal. The literal mountain would be a very tall peak that seems insurmountable, and the figurative mountain would be perhaps something that comes up in our lives. I think that Isaiah makes a point of saying it is the highest mountain because we need to have that figurative mountain coming into our lives so that we can individually see that mountain and answer for ourselves that question, what is the purpose of hope? After all, there is no mountain that is insurmountable. And I know this for a fact. Now, my sermon is titled Hope Three Stories, so here is the first story. Something you probably need to know about me before we get into this story is that I am definitely afraid of heights. It doesn't matter if it's an ascent of 10 feet or an ascent of 1,000 feet. I will go up it reluctantly, kicking and screaming the whole way. But in 2008, in the summer, I was studying abroad in Ireland, and I decided, hey, why don't I just take a leap of faith and go and climb this mountain? You know, it's just 2,500 feet, no big. It was part of a pilgrimage that is popular in Ireland to go up this mountain called Crowpatrick. It's in the western part of Ireland, and people of all nations, by the hundreds of thousands, will flock to this mountain on the last Sunday in July, a Sunday known as Garland Sunday. They go because for many different reasons, but the most popular is that at the top of the mountain is believed to be a place where St. Patrick rested his head in his attempt to convert Ireland. I went for a different reason. I went because I wanted to get over this seemingly irrational fear of heights. 2,500 feet. No big. So the first 2,300 feet, 2,200 feet or so, it's just kind of, you know, a walk in the park, a gentle slope, grassy, kind of rocky. There's no cover, but the wind is, you know, There's no real wind. But it's that last 200 feet that really challenge you. Of these hundreds of thousands of people, everyone comes as they are, whoever they are and wherever they are. They come young, old, ages in between. They come man, woman, and child. They come for reasons of their own and reasons that we all share. They come to the top to see the top of the mountain. And I almost didn't make it to the top of the mountain. 2,300 feet, no big. That last 200 feet, however, that gentle slope of grass and rock, it gives way to a windswept ascent of loose rocks and dirt. The only thing you have to hold on to, aside from your own hope, is a rope, a makeshift railing of rope. And even then, when you're holding on to it, and I was, you can still see down the ascent. That, you know, place where if you get swept off the mountain by the wind, that's where you're going to end up. I had to stop 3 times in these last 200 feet. And luckily, I brought with me, as a good Catholic boy back then, brought with me my rosary beads. I didn't remember all the prayers I was supposed to say or in what order, so on the 3rd stop, I sat down, I closed my eyes, I took out my rosary beads, and I said whatever prayer came to mind. Mostly, I prayed that I would make it to the top, and I was very close to giving up. And there I was, my eyes closed, clutching my rosary beads, and all of a sudden, I felt a hand on my shoulder. I opened my eyes, and I looked over, and there was a man who was probably the same age as my grandfather, maybe older. And as I looked at him more, I saw that he was not wearing any shoes. He was barefoot, and he had his trousers rolled up to his ankles. And as I looked into his eyes again, it was a matter of perhaps 3 seconds, just a moment. But in that moment, I believe I found God, because my hope, my courage, and my conviction was restored by the simplicity of this old man in bare feet walking up the mountain. And then he let go, and he continued on his way. And I was still clutching my rosary beads and praying. But it was a new prayer this time. I think Isaiah puts that highest mountain into the scripture because the figurative mountain is there in our lives too. A figurative mountain that helps us understand and determine for ourselves the answer to that question. What is the point of hope? I can speak from experience figuratively because my mother told me a story recently about her encounter with the mountain. This will take you back a little bit before I was born. In 1982, my mother was told that she had a kidney disease. Her mountain read kidney failure. She needed a transplant. Now, back then, transplants were still kind of a risky operation. Any number of things could happen, and any number of those things could lead to ultimately not surviving. So my mother faced this seemingly insurmountable mountain of whether or not she would survive. But she still had hope, and she hoped fiercely, and here is why. My mother has always felt close to God through her name. Her name is Anne Marie Lord. She liked her name, Anne, because it's the name of the mother of Mary. And she liked her name Marie because it is a variation of Mary. And you just throw in the Lord there and you got a trifecta. But she believed and she hoped and she desired so greatly to be a mother because she was named after mothers. And yet here was this mountain in her way. Not only a mountain saying that you may not survive, but a mountain saying that if you survive, you might not be able to have children. Along for the ride, willingly, by his version of the story, was my father, who was at the time her boyfriend and then fiancé in the process. And he also was facing a rather difficult mountain himself. You see, his mountain said sobriety. His mountain was one he had to climb in order to become sober. And thankfully, 36 years later, he is still sober. But his struggle was one with an addiction of alcoholism. Two mountains, two very courageous people. What is the point of hoping at this point? They had each other. They had each other's hope and each other's prayers. And man, were they fierce in their hope and their prayers. And the happy ending of the story, of course, is 36 years sober and a mother of five. And then there's other ways of hoping fiercely and hoping courageously, other figurative mountains. Here's the third story. My sister Katie, the oldest sister, she was doing a program of study in her master's, her graduate degree, in public health. And she chose for her field ed, she had to do 2 years, she chose for her field ed to go abroad with Peace Corps to Western Africa, to a Western African nation of Cameroon. And she was stationed in a village called Marwa in the province of Extreme Nord, which is pretty close to Nigeria. She never experienced any kind of fierce or courageous hope that was any stronger than at the end of the dry season, the very beginning of the harvest, when the villagers of Marwa would go out into the fields, they would turn over the soil, they would plant seeds, and then they would cover them up. And they'd look up into the clear sky and they would hope and pray fiercely for rain to come and water their plants. But it wouldn't come. And so the next day they would go out and they would see clouds in the distance. And they would look up to the sky again and hope and pray for water to come and nourish their plants. But it wouldn't come. So then they would go out the next day and they would see those clouds almost overhead and they would hope and pray once again fiercely for that water to nourish their crops, but it wouldn't come. And then they would go out the next day and they'd see a sky full of clouds, thick clouds, clouds full of rain, and they would hope and pray fiercely for the nourishing rain to water their crops. And it wouldn't come. And they would go out again almost at the very end of their hope, the end of their prayer. And they would offer up once again, much like Zechariah and Elizabeth, for that rain that would nourish their crops and give them that life-giving produce. And it came. And when it rained, it poured. And when it poured, it washed away all of their crops. For most people, this would be the end of hope, but not for the villagers of Marwa. Together, they would pick themselves up. They would gather up their seeds. They would turn the soil over. They would plant again. And then they would look up at those heavy, heavy rain clouds, and they would hope and pray fiercely for a gentler rain. These stories are all ones that conjure up this thought of hope fiercely, hope courageously, a hope that is beyond comprehension. Zechariah and Elizabeth wanted something very badly. They wanted a child. Elizabeth, so that she could fulfill a motherly role, not unlike my mother. And Zechariah, so that he could have a legacy to follow him, not unlike the people of Marwa. And yet, Elizabeth finds out that she's barren. And are their hopes dashed? They're strengthened They continue to pray. They continue to hope courageously and fiercely. And suddenly their prayers are answered. But here comes the catch. In a house of worship, so much hope, so much courage, so much ferocity from Zechariah. Once he receives this good news, he is so blown away. It is beyond his comprehension, and he has that moment of doubt. I would not see that moment of doubt as a moment of weakness. Yes, his powers of speech were taken away from him, but they were restored again when the child, the answer to his prayers, was delivered into the world. And of course, we know that child was also a hope in and of itself. The child was John the Baptist, who figures so prominently in our Christian story. So I return once again to that question, what is the purpose, what is the point of hoping? It's exactly this, to hope courageously, to hope fiercely, to hope even beyond our comprehension. What it gives us is this affirmation of a belief we already hold, an affirmation of the good news that has come and the good news that is coming. So this Advent season, let's hope courageously. Let's hope fiercely. Let's hope beyond our comprehension. Let's hope together, because the good news is coming. At the top of that mountain, at the top of Crowpatrick, once I finally got there, trembling, I looked around me and I was rewarded for my renewal of faith, my renewal of courage, my renewal of hope, because spread out in a breathtaking panorama was the beauty of God's creation. Is that not what we are heading toward in this Advent season?